The Bush, Travels in the Heart of Australia, written and read by Don Watson. I grew up in what people now call the bush, but I was in my 20s before I saw what we took the bush to be. It was then that I began fishing in the streams of the Great Dividing Range, the Big River, the Thompson and McAllister, the Yarrongabilly, Goodradigbee, Murrumbidgee, and the Threadbow. I had to go camping to hear what my ancestors had heard in the mornings, the cacophony when every bird seems determined to tell all the others that it has survived the night. I saw my first lyrebird this way, first bowerbird and whipbird, first wombat and first dingo. It was the first time I heard the silence creep over the land as the day got older, and the first and only time I was chased by a tiger snake. Frank Morehouse swears he has often camped in bush where no European and possibly no human being has ever been before. I can't say that I have done this, but I have been at least to places where the bush feels as it might have felt to an intruder 300 or 3,000 years ago. It was on these camps that I was taken in by the bush and realized that its magnetic charms constitute the rarest of all the privileges that living on this continent bestows. The Australian bush is both real and imaginary. Real in that it grows in various unmistakable bush-like ways and dies, rots, burns and grows into the bush again. Real in harbouring life. Imaginary in that among the life it harbours is the life of the Australian mind. It is, by many accounts, the source of the nation's idea of itself. The bush is everything from a gum tree to any of the creatures that live in it or shelter beneath it, and it is the womb and inspiration of the national character. It is the smell of eucalyptus leaves, long shards of bark waiting for a fire, the din of galahs, the cawing of crows, and invincible silence. It is the blue horizon, the ute trailing a cloud of dust, the silo, the sale yard, the drover's wife. It's an uneducated cow cocky and a private school laird with a law degree. It's each dawn heralded by the insane laughter of a kookaburra or the warble of a magpie, and the inspiration for literature, philosophy and art, and also, some will say, an impediment to all of those. The bush is a social construct as well as an ecological one. As much as the things that grow and live there, we define it by the people who inhabit it. Around 1900, at which time the legend of the bush was largely written and the national romance was most intense, a new settler in the southwest of Western Australia wrote home about the dullness of the bush. Perhaps he had not yet seen it in spring when the wattle and wildflowers were out, or was looking for something familiar and couldn't see beyond his memory of Ireland. After clambering about in it for a year or two, the romantic Polish wanderer Paul Strzelecki saw ever-changing colour, delicate and minute strains of verdure. Once you begin to see them, even the most sombre and dispiriting scrub never stops revealing subtle colours in the flowers, barks, leaves and lichens. In the trunk of a manna gum there is cream, yellow, grey-brown, tan and brilliant white. Set its pale elegance against the sky and watch its limbs sway and leaves glimmer as they catch the sun. Look at a salmon gum or gimlet, burnished like the flanks of a racehorse, as George Seddon says. Stand in a kauri forest where the sun is low and colour and light seem to explode through the canopy as if through the windows of a cathedral.